Western prayer researchers typically acknowledge what are called four kinds of prayer, four modalities of prayer. The first of those is what's called colloquial, or an informal prayer. For example, a friend of mine offered an informal or a colloquial prayer each Friday night on the way home from work on the 680 freeway in San Francisco. And the prayer simply said, "Dear God, if you let me get to the Texaco station before my gas tank runs out of gas, I'll never let my tank get this low again." And that is an example of an informal prayer where we speak to God in our own words, in our own time. Petitionary prayer, where we petition the forces of creation or the powers that be to bring to fruition our wishes of healing and peace. For example, for petitionary prayer, "I claim perfect healing now and in all past, present, future manifestations." This is an example of petitioning the powers of creation for the things that we choose to experience in our lives. The third form of prayer is a ritualistic prayer. And I'm always surprised at how many people suggest to me that, "Oh, we don't do ritual prayers in the West. Now I lay me down to sleep. God is great. God is good." Those are examples of ritualistic prayer, when we say a specific number of words in a specific pattern, a specific time of day or a specific time of year. Those are rituals. And the fourth modality of prayer, some don't even consider prayer. There's controversy as to whether or not this is even a mode of prayer. It's called the meditative prayer, where there are no words involved, where we simply are aware of the presence of a greater force around us and our existence within that force. Well, Western prayer researchers suggest that when we pray today, that we use one or some combination of these four modes of prayer. And what I know is that the prayer is a very deep, very personal experience for everyone. Everyone has their own way of accessing their relationship to a higher power. And what I'd like to say is that there are no incorrect ways to pray. However we have learned our modalities of prayer, it has served us, and they work for us, and every prayer has its place. And at the same time, in the traditions of those who have come before us, there have always been references to a modality of prayer that simply does not fit any of these four modes. It's called a fifth mode, and by some, the lost modality of prayer. And this is a mode of prayer that is described by the ancients, although it's not accounted for in science, from the temple walls and ancient texts to past civilizations to living traditions of today. This mode may best be described perhaps as feeling-based prayer. And in a feeling-based prayer, we're invited to feel the feeling of our prayer as if it's already been answered, and then give thanks of gratitude and appreciation for what has come to pass, rather than feeling powerless and asking for the intervention. In this way, we acknowledge that we are part of the world that we see around us, rather than separate from that world. And as part of the world, we are part of the prayer and part of the solution. We participate in the process of creation. The instructions for this fifth mode or feeling-based prayer are very, very precise, and we see them left to us in a number of ways, a number of different texts. And I've chosen one particular text, the Essene Gospel of Peace, to describe how we may use this mode of prayer. And when we stop and consider that the instructions that I'm about to share with you were left to us in a 2,500-year-old text, I'm in awe, and it is amazing to the degree of clarity with which they invite us to evoke this mode of prayer in our bodies. Listen closely to the words of the Essenes from the Lost Gospel of Peace. They begin by describing that we live in our world in three different ways of knowing. In their words, they say, three are the dwellings of the sons and the daughters of man. Three places that we live in this world. They are thought, feeling, and body, or emotion. And this is interesting because the body is where we hold our emotions, and they're acknowledging this in a 2,500-year-old text. Three are the dwellings of the sons and daughters of man: thought, feeling, and emotion. And now this is the key where they describe to us how we use our powers of thought, feeling, and emotion to create this mode of prayer. They say, when these three become as one, when thought, feeling, and emotion are merged into a single, powerful, potent force, then you will say to the mountain, mountain, move, and the mountain will move. When I was in the corporations and working as a scientist, and I found references such as these, I believe that they were metaphors. And I now have seen in our experiences in the monasteries in Egypt and Tibet, and under laboratory conditions, I've seen these modalities of prayers at work, and I know that these are not metaphors, that they are literal instructions in terms of how we may relate to the world around us in a very potent, very physical way. It is our marriage of thought, feeling, and emotion that becomes the language that speaks to the force, to the field of intelligence that permeates all of creation. In 1998, I had the honor and the privilege of leading a group of pilgrims through the highlands of central China in the 22 monasteries and two nunneries in Tibet. And it was during this time that I made use of this rare opportunity to interact with a living tradition, a living people, rather than the temples and the texts and the writings that we find on the walls of those who have come before us. These people are alive. They're living the traditions day in and day out. And I got to ask them through the translators. I'd look into their eyes and I'd say, please explain to me, when I see your prayers, when I see the bells and the bowls and the gongs and the chimes and the ooms and the ohms and the mudras and the mantras, and you're performing these rituals and ceremonies 14 and 16 hours a day on the outside, what happens to you on the inside? What are you feeling? And this is where the abbot of one particular monastery looked at me, and at first he chuckled. I think he chuckled at the intensity, perhaps, of my question. And through the translator, he said to me, you've never seen our prayers. He said, because a prayer cannot be seen. He said, what you have seen is the way we've learned to create the feeling inside of our bodies, the feeling of our prayer. And then he said very specifically that feeling is the prayer. And he looked at me and then he asked, how do you do it in your culture? How do you go about creating the feelings in your body to evoke the prayers of your heart's desire? And I realized with that question that this is largely what was lost in the Western traditions. When we say the words of a prayer, we believe that the words are the prayer, and we believe if we say the right words the right number of times, that our prayers are being powerful and effective. And while our words do have power and may be effective, what I've found in speaking with many people in religious traditions, looking at our texts, and people in the congregations, is that the feeling component was never really explained. It was largely lost to the West. So from experiences such as our experiences in Tibet and the indigenous peoples in the Andes of Bolivia and Peru, all through the desert Southwest, the Aboriginals, what we find is that feeling is the key to empowering the prayers of our minds and our hearts. It's our feelings that imbue life into the prayers that we create for healing in our bodies, the bodies of our loved ones, and peace in our world. And it is feeling that in large extent has been lost in the prayers of the West, feeling the feeling as if the prayer has already been answered. And I'm sharing this and elaborating just a little bit here because this is important in the gift of the blessing. The blessing is what allows and prepares our bodies so that we can feel those feelings in the presence of a world that sometimes looks and appears to us very different from the feelings that we're asked to create inside of our bodies. Feeling is the prayer. So this brings us back to the question I asked at the beginning of the program. How are we to feel the feeling of our prayers being answered, the feeling of the healing of our loved ones, the peace in our world, in the presence of situations and conditions that seem to betray those very feelings? Well, in the language of their time, ancient traditions describe precisely how to prepare ourselves to receive the power of prayer. I'd like to quote from the poet Rumi. The mystical poet Rumi so eloquently describes this place that we can move to prepare for our prayers. He says, out beyond the ideas of wrongdoing and right doing, there is a field. I will meet you there. He goes on to say that when the soul lies down in that grass, the world is too full to talk about. What is the field that Rumi is describing. Well, when we read the context of his work, we know that he's asking us to find a way to move beyond the judgments in our lives, beyond perhaps the rightness and the wrongness and the goodness and the badness and the lightness and the darkness of what the world appears to show us. Because it's in that place where we find our power. It's in the place of the non-judgment where compassion begins. And that is where we truly are given the gift of the blessing and the gift of the power of all of our prayers for ourselves and for our others. How do we get there? How do we get to that place? Well, I'm going to draw a distinction and a parallel between the way that we appear to function in our world, this world of physicality and consciousness, in the way computers work in our lives, a very brief distinction. Because many scientists now are beginning to suggest that life itself in our physical world is literally a consciousness computer, that we are the programmers of a massive molecular consciousness computer, and we're only beginning to understand that it's what we write into the program that is what is being mirrored back to us as the things that we'd like to change in our world. When we look at an electronic computer, what we find is that regardless of how large or how simple or how complex they appear to be, there are three fundamental components. There's the hardware, there's what's called the operating system, and then there's the software. The hardware are the physical gadgets that sit on your desk. And the software, the operating system that we call the Windows operating system or the IBM operating system, is what allows the information from the programs to be communicated to the hardware. Well, in a very real sense, if we look at our role in the world, our physical world is analogous to the hardware of the computer. Consciousness is analogous to the operating system. It's through our consciousness that we access the world around us, and that means that the feelings and the prayers that we create from within our bodies are the programs that work through consciousness and affect our physical world. When I share this with my Native and Indigenous friends, they share with me a wonderful story. What they say is that a long time ago, we came to this world as a family. And through a series of experiences, perhaps that we're only beginning to understand, we got lost. And when we got lost, we began to forget who we were and our relationship to the world around us. On the one hand, and on the other hand, we so long for that knowledge and that relationship again, that we began to build in the world around us complex machines and devices that mirrored what we are within the field of consciousness. So in all of our electronics, the capacitors, the resistors, the transistors, the way that information is transmitted and received, every one of those abilities that we build into our machines, we have within our bodies. And in those traditions, the traditions of the natives that are sharing these with me, they say that we will continue to build a complex world around us until we remember who we are, and then we no longer need to build the machines outside of us because we have become those functions from within. And I think this is a powerful analogy when we look at our relationship of thought, feeling, and emotion, and prayer, and the way that prayer now is documented to work through consciousness and affect our physical world. Well, just as the memory of a computer, in our electronic example, must be wiped clean each time before a new program can be started, in a very similar fashion, within us, our consciousness must be cleared of the charge, the emotional charge of the anger, the hate, the rage, the jealousy that often ensues from what the world shows us before we are able to begin to receive the full benefit and the power of our prayers. And this is the ancient gift of the blessing. This is the power of what the blessing brings into our lives. So we've reached the point in the program. I've spoken about the blessing. We've danced around it. Let's define it. What is the blessing? The blessing is a quality of thought, feeling, and emotion. It allows us to clear the judgments, our bias, the anger, and the hate that we feel regarding an event without condoning, agreeing with, or encouraging what the world has shown us. It simply acknowledges that it has occurred. Now, I'm going to be very clear when I describe this. I feel a responsibility to share this very, very clearly. Blessing does not condone or make any excuses for any act of suffering or any act of atrocity that we may see.